from Mark chapter 10, verses 35 to 45. James and John, the sons of Zebedee, came forward to him and said to him, "Teacher, we want you to do for us whatever we ask of you." And he said to them, "What is it you want me to do for you?" And they said to him, "Grant us to sit, one at your right hand and one at your left, in your glory." But Jesus said to them, "You do not know what you are asking. Are you able to drink the cup that I drink, or be baptized with the baptism that I am baptized with?" They replied, "We are able." Then Jesus said to them, "The cup that I drink you will drink, and the baptism with which I am baptized you will be baptized. But to sit at my right hand or at my left is not mine to grant, but it is for those for whom it has been prepared." When the 10 heard this, they began to be angry with James and John. So Jesus called them and said to them, "You know that among the Gentiles, those whom they recognize as their rulers lord it over them, and their great ones are tyrants over them. But it is not so among you. But whoever wishes to become great among you must be your servant, and whoever wishes to be first among you must be servant of all. For the Son of Man came not to be served, but to serve, and to give his life as a ransom for many." This scripture is actually the third part of a brief trilogy in the Gospel of Mark. The trilogy in this case is that Jesus predicts his suffering and his death, and the disciples respond by doing something kind of stupid. It's part tragedy and part comedy, really. All of this happens in three short chapters of Mark, and it's bookended by Jesus healing blind men, in case we don't get what Jesus is doing here. He's practically going to be screaming, "See, I'm healing blind men, and there are blind disciples to my mission and my plan. Don't you get it?" But anyways, the first time that Jesus predicts his suffering and death in Mark 8, Peter scolds him for talking like this, and Jesus rebukes him by saying, "Get behind me, Satan." The second time Jesus predicts his suffering and death in Mark chapter 9, the disciples get into an argument about who is the greatest among them. Jesus tries to teach them here by bringing a child into their midst and saying that whoever welcomes a child welcomes him, and whoever wants to be first must be least and last of all. All this brings us to the final episode of the trilogy that we read. We didn't read the part where Jesus predicts his suffering and his death. So just so you know, right before the scripture we read, we get this. They were on the road going up to Jerusalem, and Jesus was walking ahead of them. They were amazed, and those who followed were afraid. He took the 12 aside again and began to tell them what was to happen to them, saying, "See, we are going up to Jerusalem, and the Son of Man will be handed over to the chief priests and the scribes, and they will condemn him to death. And then they will hand him over to the Gentiles. They will mock him and spit upon him and flog him and kill him. And after 3 days, he will rise again." Now, immediately after this, James and John, disciples, brothers, sons of Zebedee, pull Jesus aside and essentially say to him, "Hey, Jesus, we want you to do this favor for us, and we need you to agree to this favor before we even tell you what the favor is," which all of us as humans know already that this isn't going to end well. Jesus, also human, does the smart thing and asks what the favor is before he agrees to grant it. And this is when James and John give their request. They want to sit at Jesus' right and left in heaven. Jesus is predicting horrible suffering and death, and all James and John want to talk about is where they're going to sit in heaven. Now, it's easy to be aghast at James and John's cluelessness here. Clearly, there are more important things they should be discussing. Clearly, this far into following Jesus, they should know that Jesus doesn't care about power and prestige and recognition. You start to wonder if they've even been listening to him at all. Now, that's an obvious first reaction, but I think that our scripture, especially how Jesus responds to James and John, requires that we look a little deeper at their question. I'm not going to say that it was a good question or that they were right to be seeking out this request, but I will say this. I think they had been listening to Jesus, really listening, and his multiple predictions about suffering and death. And I think they were afraid and confused and worried and in crisis. And so their question, it's less about an internal seating chart, and it's more about self-preservation. They understand that something bad is going to happen, and so they want to save themselves. They want to make sure that they're going to be okay. That even in the suffering and death, if it happens here on earth, perhaps they can clear up with Jesus now, that in eternity everything's going to be okay, and that they'll receive their due glory. In reality, this is a really human response. We do this today as well. When we face times of trial, when we feel as though we're under attack, when our life feels out of control, when we're worried or we're afraid, do we also not tend to seek self-preservation? Do we also not give in to our fears of scarcity, start to see our friends and companions as competition, and focus on looking out for number one? When things are uncertain, we think of ourselves first. When things are unknown, we first try to define our own path. And that's exactly what James and John are doing here. That's why they ask this question about where they're going to sit in heaven. And it's why they do it separate from all the other disciples. And it might have worked, too, if not for Jesus and his answer that turns everything upside down. Because then Jesus says to all the disciples, "But it be not so among you. But whoever wishes to be great among you must be your servant. And whoever wishes to be first among you must be servant of all. For the Son of Man came not to be served, but to serve, and to give his life as a ransom for many." Jesus essentially tells them that if they want to save themselves, they have to save others. If they want self-preservation, they have to think about others first. If they want to be served, they have to serve others. Jesus calls the disciples in the midst of the unknown, in the midst of fear, in the midst of anxiety, to focus on serving others. Jesus calls them not to think of themselves, but of others. Now, that's a high and difficult calling, both for the disciples and for us today. Because sure, we're okay with the idea of service when it's convenient and easy, but what Jesus is calling us to here is service even when it's not convenient and easy. Service at times when it would be easier to be selfish. But you know, eventually the disciples get it. Because after Jesus' death and resurrection, they give their lives to service to others in the name of Christ. And most of them experience the suffering and the death that Jesus describes here. They begin to learn and live in a way that puts service first, that puts others' needs first. That's not about saving themselves, but about saving others. And there are countless people who have lived like that since then. Some of you might be familiar with Flat Rock Homes, which is one of the ministries of our Methodist church that we support. Flat Rock is now a home for those with mental and developmental disabilities. But Flat Rock actually started as an orphanage. During the Civil War, what to do with orphans became a huge problem in this country. Children from the East Coast who were orphaned were often placed on trains westbound, hoping that they would be picked up by family members or generous individuals at different stops. By the time children got out to the western part of Ohio, there wasn't much hope that anyone would be left to take them in. So pastors and members of the Evangelical Association Church, which is one of the churches that later merged into the United Methodist Church, decided that something must be done about these orphans. Even in the midst of war, when all were facing shortages and loss and trials, these Christians decided that service must take priority. And so what became Flat Rock actually started in July of 1966 with 8 children, all because some Christians were able to look past their own self-preservation to the needs of others. They were able to think not about their own glory or power, but about how they could help others, even if they were unsure about their own future. We're called to do that same thing today. Well, it might not be as obvious as it was for the disciples or for those Christians during the Civil War. We still live in times of uncertainty and unknown. We're still tempted to look out for others, for ourselves before others. Yet Jesus calls us to put others before ourselves. Jesus calls us to lives of service. Maybe you're slow to serve in a certain way because you don't think you'll be any good at it. You haven't worked with people like that before. You haven't done that type of service before. And so you're anxious or afraid. Well, Jesus here calls us to take a risk, to try something new, to serve even in the midst of the unknown. Maybe you aren't sure that you have enough to give, enough money or time or talent. Jesus here calls us to give, to put service instead of gathering for ourselves. Or maybe you're slow to serve because there are just so many things wrong in our world today that you don't think you could possibly make a difference. Jesus calls us to serve anyway, to believe and trust that our service does make a difference.